ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
हरे कृष्ण वेलकम टू द लास्ट एपिसोड of the sixth cant of Srimad Bhagavatam in our series of Bhagavata Pravaha lectures. And today we will be discussing the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. In the previous episode, we have seen the devotional qualities of Vritrasur. So Vritrasur appeared from the sacrificial fire of Tvashta and he fought with Indra and Indra killed Vritrasur. And while fighting with Indra, Vritrasur exhibited a lot of devotional qualities, and seeing such wonderful devotion of Vritrasur and maturity and detachment and renunciation of Vritrasur, Parikshit Maharaj, who has been hearing this story, was so surprised. So Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami, "Oh Sukadeva Goswami, devotees are so rare. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanaham sudurlabha prashantatma kotishvapi mahamuni. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanaha." Amongst such muktas and siddhas also, amongst such perfected beings and liberated beings also, narayana parayana is extremely rare. Out of millions and trillions of jivas, human beings are very rare. They are very small in number. And amongst those human beings, those who follow the Vedic religious principles, karmis, they are even more rare. And amongst those karmis also, those who are desiring liberation, they are even more rare. Among such people, those who are actually liberated, they are even more rare. And amongst those liberated souls, those who have actually understood the meaning of liberation and attained perfection or siddhi, they are extremely rare. And amongst those muktas and siddhas also, bhaktas are even more rare. Narayana parayanas are extremely rare. Narayana para means one who has exclusively dedicated oneself to the service of Narayana. Such a person is extremely rare. And Vritrasur seems to be belonging to the category of Narayana parayana. How is it so? Generally, demons are into mode of passion and ignorance. That too, on the battlefield, their passion is at peak and they cannot exhibit any devotional qualities. But Vritrasur, being in a demon body, on the battlefield, he was offering exemplary prayers to the Lord. So, Parikshit Maharaj was so surprised hearing this narration. He asked Sukadeva Goswami, "What is the reason why Vritrasur is so glorious?" Then Sukadeva Goswami began responding to the question of Parikshit and he spoke about the previous life of Vritrasur. Vritrasur, in his past life, was a king named Chitraketu Maharaj. So Chitraketu Maharaj was a very exalted king. He was the king of the province named Surasena, and he was practically ruling the entire earth. He had all prosperity in his kingdom and there were no natural calamities, there were no other disturbances. He was very beautiful, very young, youthful, and he had high birth, full education, he has a lot of wealth and opulence, and he has so many ministers and servants and all the royal paraphernalia was around him. He was happy in all respects. But he had one difficulty. He did not have a son. He married a queen. He did not have a son. He married again, second time. No son. Third marriage, no son. 10 queens, no son. 20 queens, no son. 100 queens, no son. 1000 queens, no son. And 1 lakh wives, no son. And he married 1 crore wives. He did not have an offspring. So, Chitraketu Maharaj married 1 crore wives not for sense gratification. He married 1 crore wives to get a son. Why he is so obsessed to get a son? Why he wants a son so desperately? Because as a responsible king, Chitraketu Maharaj wanted to give a proper successor after his retirement. So Chitraketu Maharaj, he understands that he cannot rule the kingdom forever. So at one point he has to give up the body, he has to retire from active life as a king. So then an able successor has to take over the kingdom. So it's the responsibility of a king to install, to enthrone another capable king on the throne before he retires. So Chitraketu Maharaj's desire to have a son was proper in from that perspective. But from another perspective, from a spiritual perspective, Chitraketu Maharaj should have understood that having a son was not there within his destiny. So although he is marrying 1 crore wives, he is not getting a single son, means it's not there in his destiny. But he was so desirous and ambitious to get a son. So nothing in his kingdom gave him happiness. So all his opulence and enjoyment did not give him actually happiness because he did not have a son. So one day, a great sage named Angira Rishi came to Chitraketu's kingdom. He came to his palace on his own, Idrichaya, somehow by the will of providence, by his own sweet will. This Angira Rishi came to Chitraketu's kingdom, and Chitraketu Maharaj received Angira Rishi very well, and he gave him all hospitality. He gave him a proper seat to sit on, and he washed his lotus feet, and he worshipped the sage so nicely, as it is natural for a householder and a king to receive brahmanas properly at his house. Chitraketu treated Angira Rishi in a very exemplary and loving manner. So with the reception of Chitraketu Maharaj, Angira was so satisfied, he was so impressed, and the sage congratulated Chitraketu for his humility and hospitality. Then Angira Rishi asked Chitraketu Maharaj, "My dear king, are you happy? Are you happy in all respects?" Generally, 7 kinds of elements protect a king: guru, ministers, kingdom, fort, treasury, royal order, and friends. So a king is happy only when all these 7 elements are happy. Are you happy? All your the brahmanas who are guiding you, the soldiers who are serving you, and your ministers and your wives, and everybody is happy. So actual happiness of the king depends on his dependents also. The king is taking care of his citizens, and the citizens are dependent on the king. If the citizens are happy, king is also happy. And if the king is happy, citizens are also happy. So the king and citizens, the happiness of king and citizens is dependent on each other's happiness. So there is mutual dependency. Not that king is happy and the citizens are morose, or the citizens are happy and king is morose. So king is actually unhappy. Chitraketu did not have a son, so he was unhappy. That unhappiness is there in his citizens and in his palace residents also. Okay. So our Angira Rishi asked Chitraketu Maharaj, "So are people under your control? So are they doing well?" Actually, a king is supposed to control the citizens, not in a mood of dictator or not in a mood of bossing over them or dictating them or dominating them, but in the mood of protecting them. An aspect of protection is also to correct them and punish them if needed, and to control them to a certain degree only to streamline their activities in a proper manner. So Angira Rishi asked that Chitraketu's welfare is not dependent only on his personal welfare, it is also dependent on the welfare of his dependents. So Angira Rishi asked Chitraketu in various ways, and finally he said, "Angira, Chitraketu Maharaj, I can see some anxiety in you. Your face is reflecting some anxiety in mind. So what are you thinking about? Are you completely happy?" Then Chitraketu Maharaj said, "O great sage, what is unknown to you? You are great sage, and you have great power to understand the minds of common people because of your deep austerity, your devotion to the Lord, and your great ability to understand the minds of other people. You can easily figure out what they are going through. So your purity will make you understand others. When a devotee is pure, he can easily understand the minds of other people also. But Chitraketu Maharaj said, "Anyways, you have asked me the reason for my anxiety. I will reveal. Oh, Angira Rishi, I am very unhappy. There is a lot of anxiety in my mind. The reason is that I don't have a son. So I need a son now. Can you please help me to get a son? All my kingdom and wealth and wives and treasury and ministers and royal entourage, everything is not actually making me happy because I don't have son. The nature of mind is that although we have 99 things, and if we have don't have one thing, the mind will focus on that one thing that we don't have, and mind becomes morose. That's the nature of people in this world. Like generally, not everybody. There are some people who are very composed. Even although they lack something, they can still be happy. But generally, people focus on what they don't have than focusing on what they have. So Chitraketu Maharaj was not happy with whatever he has, but he's unhappy for what he does not have. So here, Chitraketu explained the cause of his anxiety and requested Angira Rishi, "Oh Angira Rishi, can you please help me to get a son? Then, if I get a son, that son will offer oblations to my forefathers, to my ancestors. So it's a service to my forefathers also, and it is service to my citizens also. Who will offer Pindadan after my death? So what will happen to my ancestors?" He was thinking in these lines. So Angira Rishi understood the mind of Chitraketu. Angira Rishi did not instruct Chitraketu that everything is temporary. You should not feel so obsessed with a desire to have a son. So better you give up this desire. He did not say anything like that. Angira Rishi just told Chitraketu Maharaj that I will conduct a sacrifice so that you can get a son. So Angira Rishi conducted a sacrifice. And from that sacrifice, the Yajna Purusha came with a pot of payasam, pot of sweet rice. And this Chitraketu Maharaj received that pot of sweet rice and gave that sweet rice to his wife. He has 1 crore wives. Whom should he give that sweet rice? So he gave to the Jyeshta and Sreshta. Jyeshta means eldest queen, Sreshta means best queen. His eldest queen happens to be the best queen, and her name is Kritadyuti. So Angira Rishi, or Chitraketu Maharaj, took that payasam and gave it to Kritadyuti. And Kritadyuti took it, and she will eventually give birth to a child. So Angira Rishi, having conducted this sacrifice, he gave one hint to Chitraketu. "My dear King Chitraketu, you are going to have a son." Chitraketu became so happy. And that son will be Harsha Soka Prada. Means he will be giving you both happiness and distress. So Angira Rishi gave this much hint and then he departed. Then Chitraketu understood the sage's words in a different manner. He thought that, why my son is giving me happiness and distress both? Maybe he will be very mischievous or disobedient to me. So that way he may give me some unhappiness. But no problem, having a disobedient son is better than having no son. So he will be the one and only son of this emperor. He could be very pampered and he could be a little proud. But it's okay, no problem. I need a son. So Chitraketu Maharaj just became very happy that I am going to have a son, and he offered profuse amount of charity to people, like just a cloud that rains at different places. And eventually Kritadyuti became pregnant and she gave birth to a child, and the king became so jubilant because king became happy. All the citizens and palace residents, they also became so happy, and there was a great celebration in the entire kingdom. And Chitraketu started spending a lot of time with the child, with the son, and with also the queen who gave birth to the son. So Chitraketu's attention and affection for Kritadyuti and her son increased day by day, and slowly he neglected other wives. He had 1 crore wives, and he was giving all his time and attention to one wife and her child only, the newborn son only, and he neglected remaining 1 crore minus one wives. 99,99,999 wives were neglected by Chitraketu. So this, when Chitraketu's affection for Kritadyuti increased, other wives became so lost, other wives became so envious. The sunless queens became extremely unhappy. They condemned themselves out of envy. They thought that only the king is neglecting us because of this child, newborn child. He is giving more attention to Kritajyuti only. What mistake did we do? Actually, if that payasam was given to any of these 99,99,999 wives, they also could have become pregnant, but she was the chosen wife. She became pregnant and she gave birth to child. But they did not give birth to child. So these wives thought that the life of a sonless queen is worse than a maid servant, because the husband will neglect such queens who do not give birth to children. And at least maid servants have an opportunity to go and interact with the king, but we do not have any opportunity. The king does not have time for us. The king gives all time to Kritajyuti only. So they condemned themselves. So they thought that they were being neglected, ignored and disrespected. So they became very envious, and because of that envy, hatred and hard-heartedness took place in their heart. So what did they do? That striyo daruna chetasaha. So vidvesha nashta matayoho striyo daruna chetasaha garam dadur kumaraya. So vidvesha nashta matayo, because of their envy, they have lost their intelligence. Envy leads to losing of intelligence. So envy, loss of intelligence. Then vidvesha nashtamatayo striyo daruna chetasaha, they became extremely hard-hearted. So the results of envy are losing of intelligence, becoming hard-hearted, and third thing is taking to destructive action. What destructive action did they do? Garam daduhu kumaraya, they have given poison to this small boy. They thought that this small boy is the cause of our pain. Actually, Kritajyuti became pregnant and gave birth to the child, and Chitraketu Maharaj neglected the queens. So what did the small child do? But they thought that child is the culprit. So oftentimes in this material world, we start thinking that we are victims and others are culprits. So that victim consciousness and culprit consciousness will kill Krishna consciousness. So here, all these people, this 99,99,999 queens of Chitraketu gave poison to this boy, this small child who was just born, who was hardly just a few months old or few days old. So the child died. Because they gave poison, the child died. And the maid servant came to pick up the child, and the mother, Kritajyuti, thought that the child was sleeping for a long time. So she had sent the maid servant to wake up the child, but the child did not get up. And the maid servant realized that the child died, and Kritajyuti came running to the child, and the child died. And she was lamenting so much. And when Kritajyuti started lamenting, all the palace residents also joined her, and they started lamenting. And even these other queens who administered poison to the child, they also started lamenting, but they were acting as if they were crying. And this whole news was told to Chitraketu Maharaj. Chitraketu Maharaj came there, falling and tripping, and then somehow managed to reach the spot where the child was there. And he was crying so profusely out of separation from the child. So Chitraketu Maharaj anticipated a lot for the son's birth. And the son, although he was very young, very small, he just left the body untimely. So Chitraketu Maharaj was devastated. Kritajyuti was also devastated. And all the other palace residents were crying in pain, in sorrow. And all this is because of the envious nature of all these queens. So they were neglected by their husband. When a husband neglects, it's natural for a wife to feel morose. There is another incident in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Uttanapada had two wives. We discussed it in our Bhagavat Pravaha series. Uttanapada had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. Suruchi was his favorite wife, and Suniti was neglected by Uttanapada. And Suruchi's son, Dhruva, was also insulted by Uttanapada and Suruchi. So Suniti's son, sorry. So Suniti was not the favorite wife of Uttanapada, and Suniti was neglected by Uttanapada, but Suniti did not feel any envy or hatred towards either Suruchi or Uttanapad. So she was not having any anger. And even when Dhruva Maharaj was insulted by Suruchi and neglected by Uttanapad also, Suniti only told Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Lord to fulfill any of his desires. So because Suniti was a great devotee of the Lord, Suniti did not develop any envy, or she did not lose her intelligence. She did not become hard-hearted. She did not take to destructive action like these wives of Chitraketu. So wives of Chitraketu are not described to be great devotees of the Lord, but Suniti was a great devotee of the Lord. So when we have bhakti towards the Supreme Lord, we will have the ability to digest all reversals and neglect from others. So Suniti could digest the neglectful attitude of her husband, and she gave teachings of bhakti to her son. And eventually her devotion brought a transformation in the life of both Dhruva and Suruchi and Uttanapad also. Because she had patience, she had tolerance, she had devotion to the Lord, her consciousness, her divine consciousness brought a transformation in others also. But the poor consciousness of these envious queens, ruined the life of the small child. So because of their envy, they killed the small child and they unnecessarily caused a lot of pain to the entire palace, including their husband and co-wife. So when we worship the Supreme Lord, we will develop the maturity to digest reversals in life and also eventually transform those reversals and transform those difficulties as opportunities to come closer to Krishna and bring a transformation in others also, others' poor consciousness also. But our poor consciousness, our envy, our hatred, our hard-heartedness will create disturbance not only in our lives but in others' lives also. And the situation of Suniti and these wives of Chitraketu is more or less similar. Husband's neglect was the case there. And Suruchi, at least Suniti was alone. But these wives of Chitraketu, 99,99,999 wives of Chitraketu, each of them had 99,99,998 companions to share their difficulty. But collectively they were envious. Individually they were envious. Collectively also they were envious. Their collective and individual envy and dissatisfaction killed a small child. And now entire palace was filled with moroseness. And Queen Kritadyuti started lamenting for the death of the child. And she started chastising the providence. Oh God, oh providence, you are so merciless. How can you oppose your own creative laws? How can a child die during the lifetime of his father? Father is alive and the son died. How is it possible? Who is elder? Elder person has to die first. So you created bondage and affection between people, between parents and the child, and you are unnecessarily separating. You are behaving like a child, inexperienced child. So then Kritadyuti chastised the Supreme Lord directly. Sometimes in distress, we even blame God. When there is a lot of happiness, we tend to claim credit for ourselves. When there is distress, we tend to blame God. That's the nature of an average conditioned soul, oftentimes. So then in this way, Kritadyuti criticized the Lord. And later she started thinking that, why am I gossiping with this foolish God? So let me talk to my child. Oh child, get up. You cannot die so early. Get up from your sleep. Your playmates are waiting for you. So come and take your milk, take your food. You should play. So like that she started speaking. And everybody was lamenting. Chitraketu was also crying. He was totally speechless. So in that context, we completed the 14th chapter. So we are entering 15th chapter. In this context, Angira Rishi came there, along with Narada Muni. So Angira Rishi and Narada Muni came to Chitraketu Maharaj, and Chitraketu Maharaj was lamenting now. Angira Rishi understood Chitraketu's lamentation. So Angira and Narada Muni asked Chitraketu, what is the relationship with this dead body in the past, present and future? Basically, this whole episode describes the temporary nature of material relationships. Now, the sages asked Chitraketu Maharaj, why are you crying? And it's obvious, we are crying for the departure of this, death of this boy. So, whom are you interacting with till now? Through this body only. Body of the child is still lying there. And you have never actually seen the person within the body. So, who left? The person inside the body left. So, what was the relationship between you and the child? So, they asked this question. They say, the sages said that the embodied beings are like sand particles. If you go to a sea beach, you can see that picture. You go to the beach of an ocean, you see a lot of sand particles together. As you are walking, some sand particles may be touched to your feet, and as you are walking, some sand particles will go to different place. So what is the meaning or tenure of the association of two sand particles on the beach? They cannot stay together forever. So similarly, the living entities also come together, they are united for some purpose at some point of time, for some duration only, and they will be separated. So it is as temporary as the association of two sand particles on the beach. They are separated by the waves. Now the waves are pushing the sand particles and then pulling the sand particles inside. So when the waves, the ocean waves are managing the course of the sand particles, how long they can stay together? So artificial relationship of this parenthood is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Lord. Sometimes a potent seed may give rise to a plant. Sometimes the seed may not give rise to a plant only. So like that, like the parent may feel a sense of possessiveness towards the child, but the relationship between the parent and child is so temporary, so feeble. It's not permanent. That exists only as long as the body exists. Of course, that does not mean we should become irresponsible towards the children or parents. The point is the loving bonding and responsibility between parent and children should exist. But one should also understand that the supreme parent is Krishna and this relationship is temporary, which is based on bodily relation. But spirit souls are related to each other because they are all parts and parcels of Krishna. But that relation that manifests through temporary material body is restricted only to one lifetime. Okay. So at the age of say 25 or 30, a father may give birth to a child, or mother may give birth to a child. So now the mother who gave birth to a child may live for 50 years. Means the association and the relationship between this mother and the child is only for 25 years. Okay, or maybe little more or little less. But as long as the body is there, that relationship is there. But both are spirit souls. Both are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In that sense, they are eternally connected. Eternally, this is eternally, all the living entities are part of Krishna's family. But that family in which bodily relationships are prominent is temporary, and that family and that relationships is not permanent, and one needs to realize that. That's what Chitraketu Maharaj is being taught by Angira Rishi and Narada Muni. So everything in the entire cosmos now is a temporary situation. It's like dream. So when we are sleeping, we get some dream. In the dream, we may see stars or sun or moon, or we may become kings, or we may be chased by tigers and lions. But once the dream is over, once we get up from the sleep, we have a different life. Similarly, this whole material world and all the material relationships and anxieties and happiness in this material world is also like a dreamy situation. When we wake up to our spiritual consciousness, when we realize our real permanent relationship with the Supreme Lord, then all the external material relationships will seem very temporary and insubstantial in that sense. So the Lord is like a boy playing. You can see that boy playing with his toys. So the boy may bring two toys together and he may just separate them. So similarly, the Lord also brings two living entities together and he may separate them. In the 10th canto also, there is a beautiful shloka. Naikatra priya samvasah suhrudam chitra karmanam oghenah vyuhamananam plavanam srotaso yatham. So although two people love each other, they cannot stay together because chitra karmanam, every single living entity has a unique karma. Just like you put two twigs or two floating objects on a flowing river. How long will they stay together? As the river is flowing, these two floating objects may flow together. At one point they may get separated also, never to meet again. Similarly, in this material world, we come in contact with people and stay together for some time at some location, for some reason, and we may get permanently separated forever. We don't know. So, as long as we are together, we need to be responsible and loving to each other in the relationship. But at the same time, we need to understand that our relationship with Krishna is permanent. So, all the material elements and jiva are eternal. Means, these material elements are there in the body. At the time of the death of the body, the material elements will just go back into the nature. And the soul remains eternal. So the soul is parent parcel of the Supreme Lord. There is no death for the soul. And the material elements also will go back to the bigger volume of material elements. So that, and when the soul enters a body, which is a specific combination of material elements, some designations are created. So the soul entered this body, and this body is a male body, is an Indian body or American body, or it's a Brahmana body or Kshatriya body, Brahmachari body or Grihastha body. So like that, there are so many designations because of this body, because of the external situation. All the designations are temporary. When the soul goes away from this material body, which is just a combination of material elements, then all the designations are destroyed. No designation will work. So why should you be so attached to it? That's what the sages tell Chitraketu. And Chitraketu glorified Narada Muni and Angira Muni. And he says, you have enlightened me. You have taught me the temporary nature of this material relationships. You are all great Vaishnavas. So please, I am like a village animal. I am ignorant. Please enlighten me with spiritual knowledge. Then Narada Muni and Angira start speaking. Angira Rishi says that, I am that same Angira Rishi who gave you this son. And he is the powerful, says Narada Muni. Advanced devotees should not lament. Chitraketu, potentially you are a great devotee, but you are unnecessarily lamenting for the death of your son. So you should not be lamenting like this. So all the possessions in this material world and all the relationships in this material world, they are all temporary. They are like Gandharvapura. You can see sometimes in the sky, you will see a big city. There is Gandharva Nagara. All these illusions and dreams and mental concoctions are so temporary and insubstantial. You should not be so caught up in that. And because of past actions, there are visible objects. And we see some objects. And within the mind, we have some imaginations. And we do further activities. So because of one material activity and some imagination and some desire and concoction, we do further material activities. So doing so many material activities will entangle us in the material existence only. Bodily conception and body are the source of all miseries. So please try to understand your real position. Give up this unnecessary attachment. So Narada Muni told Chitraketu Maharaj, I will give you one mantra, that is Sankarshana mantra. You chant that mantra and receive the darshan of the Lord within just 7 days. So in this way, Narada Muni instructed Chitraketu Maharaj. And later in the 16th chapter, Narada Muni, to further emphasize his teachings, Narada Muni, by his mystic power, he brought this dead son alive. The dead body of the small child is lying there. So Narada Muni, by his mystic power, made the boy get up. And then he told the boy, oh dear boy, your parents, your friends and your relatives are in grief because you just left the body. You passed away. They are crying. So please re-enter the body and give happiness to your relatives and accept the throne and be happy there. Then the child started speaking, saying that, oh, Narada Muni, in which life are these people my parents? So I transmigrate from one body to another body according to my karma. So in human birth, I had human parents. In dog birth and cat birth, I had dog parents and cat parents. Like that, in different births, I had different parents. So no one is permanently related in this material world. That relationships that are brought about by the material body are temporary in nature, and no one is permanently related despite various transactions. Just like money transactions happen. So somebody will just exchange money for some commodities, right? So this money, those notes, that money does not permanently belong to one person. It goes from this person to another person, another person to another person. The note that you are holding, 1,000 rupee note, will not remain with you after some time. And that will go to different people. Similarly, all the relationships also are like that. And the soul also is related to different people in different lifetimes, in different bodies. And all these relations are temporary. So continuous transmigration is going on, just as continuous money transition is going on, transaction is going on. So all the relationships and the possessiveness induced through those relationships are temporary. So then the jiva, the small child, also started glorifying the Supreme Lord and gave a contrast between the Lord and the jiva. So then Chitraketu was enlightened. All the palace residents were astonished to see the dead boy coming alive and then speaking all this philosophy and then going back. Then the child went back, and Chitraketu Maharaj and all the other palace residents organized for the funeral rites, the final rites of this boy. And after doing the funeral ceremonies, they became peaceful. And Kratadyuti's co-wives, they were ashamed. They lost their bodily luster because of killing a small child. And under Brahmana's directions, they performed atonement also on the bank of Yamuna. And Chitraketu Maharaj was totally enlightened, renounced and detached from this whole material transactions. He came out of this dark well of family life. So it's like an elephant who has taken bath and coming out of that water reservoir. He bathed, offered oblations to forefathers and demigods, and he offered obeisances to Chitraketu, Angira Rishi and Narada Muni. And Narada Muni instructed Chitraketu further in the philosophy, and finally he gave him Sankarsana mantra, by which Chitraketu Maharaj attained the darshan of Lord Sankarsan just within 7 days. So Chitraketu achieved bhakti unto the Supreme Lord by chanting that mantra. The one result that Chitraketu has achieved is the rule of Vidyadhara planet. Eventually, Chitraketu Maharaj became the king of Vidyadhara planet. But the primary result that Chitraketu achieved by chanting that Sankarsana mantra is to attain the shelter of Lord Sankarsana, Lord Anantadeva. So Chitraketu Maharaj got the darshan of Ananta, as you are seeing in that picture. The Lord is sitting there along with the four Kumaras, and Chitraketu is offering prayers to the Lord. So Chitraketu was completely purified in this consciousness, and he started glorifying the Supreme Lord. Oh Lord, this creation, maintenance and destruction happen only by your opulences, only by your power. So you are unlimited. From your bodily pores, millions and millions of universes manifest. By criticizing devotees, some people criticize devotees and they worship different devatas. So those people will not gain the ultimate benefit of life. If the Supreme Lord is avoided, one will only have repeated birth and death. So like that, Chitraketu Maharaj also glorifies Bhagavata Dharma or Bhakti Yoga. Devotees accept Bhagavata Dharma to achieve the shelter of your lotus feet. And this Bhagavata Dharma is completely different from Kamya Dharma. Means Bhagavata Dharma means the ultimate duty of all living entities, which is Bhakti Yoga. Kamya Dharma means that which is desired by people based on their sense gratificatory propensities. So the path of Bhagavata Dharma is followed by cultured people. So one will be freed from all material contamination by following Bhagavata Dharma. Materialistic men cannot recognize you because they see separatist mentality in you also. They consider you as partial, but you are the Supreme Lord, equal in bestowing your blessings to everyone. So the Lord confirmed that because of the mercy of Narada Muni and Angira Rishi, you have attained this position, you have attained my darshan also. So I live in all the jivas as super soul. My name and form are eternal. They do not belong to this material world. So both jiva and prakriti rest in me. Like that, the Lord also gave his teachings to Chitraketu Maharaj, and he also explained the whole process of transmigration, and finally the Supreme Lord Sankarsana disappeared, and Chitraketu Maharaj became so overwhelmed with love and affection for the Lord, and he continued his life as the king of Vidyadhara planet. That completes the 16th chapter. In the 14th chapter, we have seen Chitraketu Maharaj getting a son and then losing that son. In the 15th chapter, we have seen how Chitraketu was enlightened by Narada Muni and Angira Rishi. In the 16th chapter, we have seen how Chitraketu Maharaj attained the darshan of Lord Sankarsana and perfected his life. Now, in the 17th chapter, a very peculiar incident has happened in the life of Chitraketu Maharaj. Chitraketu became the king of Vidyadhara planet, and he started traveling in a very beautiful airplane along with so many Vidyadhara women going to different places. One day, Chitraketu Maharaj came to a place where Lord Shiva was sitting with his wife Parvati on his lap, and he was addressing so many sages and other perfected beings there. Narada Muni was sitting there, and so many sages and other people were sitting in a very great assembly, and Shiva was sitting there and speaking on philosophical subjects while keeping his wife Parvati on his lap and embracing her. So it's common for a husband to embrace his wife. There's nothing objectionable there. But Shiva was doing it in public, and Chitraketu Maharaj became very concerned about it. He was traveling in his airplane, which is given by the Lord, and he saw Shiva in this assembly, and Chitraketu expressed his wonder. He started speaking little loudly. "Oh Shiva, you are Loka Guru. You are the guru of all people in this world. You give Vedic instructions. You are Dharmam Vakta. Means you are the speaker of religion. You are Sharirina Masti Mukhyaha. Means you are the chief of all living entities. And Jatadhara Tivratapa. You are extremely austere. You wear matted locks of hair. And Brahmavadi Sabhapatihi. You are the president of the assembly of all people who are well versed in Vedic knowledge. And Mahavrata Dharo, you perform great austerities. Although you are qualified in so many ways like this, I am very surprised to see you sitting so intimately with your wife in an assembly of great souls." Chitraketu laughed at Lord Shiva, and he spoke very boldly, loudly, and repeatedly, confidently in front of the whole assembly. But Chitraketu's main concern is, even ordinary people also embrace their wives in private, in seclusion. How can such an exalted devotee like Lord Shiva embrace his wife in public? So if Shiva does like this, common people might see him and they might understand, they might misunderstand Lord Shiva's position. They may criticize Lord Shiva. They may disrespect Lord Shiva, and they may offend Lord Shiva, and they will be affected by those offensive reactions. So Chitraketu was concerned that Shiva should not be misunderstood, Shiva should not be defamed in the eyes of common people. So Shiva may restrain from this kind of behavior. That was the expectation of Chitraketu Maharaj. Chitraketu had a very good intent, noble intent. He definitely respects Lord Shiva. He definitely worships and adores Lord Shiva, but he could not tolerate that common people should not misunderstand and common people should not criticize Lord Shiva. So out of his concern, while expressing his concern to Lord Shiva, Chitraketu himself criticized Lord Shiva, which is very unpleasant. Chitraketu did not mean anything wrong, but what was wrong in on his part was Chitraketu spoke about Lord Shiva publicly, loudly and repeatedly and confidently, and he had the confidence and boldness to speak about Lord Shiva, who is a very exalted Vaishnava, in front of everyone. So he thought himself qualified or fit enough to give a feedback to Lord Shiva directly. So one should not give teachings to the Lord. Although what he said is correct, but he should have understood that his own position is not as exalted or as great as Lord Shiva, and he should have restrained. But Chitraketu just spoke out. So, but Chitraketu did not mean anything offensive. For instance, Daksha criticized Lord Shiva in that great assembly. In the fourth canto we have discussed, Daksha offended Lord Shiva, he criticized Lord Shiva, but Daksha's heart was filled with a lot of hatred and envy towards Lord Shiva. So Daksha did not have a very pure intent in criticizing Lord Shiva, although Chitraketu had that good intent. So Chitraketu Maharaj was not actually offensive to Lord Shiva in that sense, because he never had any envy or hatred or anger towards Shiva. But he was concerned that Shiva should not be subjected to infamy. People should not misunderstand Shiva. He was concerned about that. So that's why he spoke like this. How can he embrace openly? So Shiva smiled, because Shiva understood the intention of Chitraketu. Although he was a little bold in expression, but Chitraketu's point is valid. Shiva understood the intention of Chitraketu, and Shiva did not say anything. And because Shiva did not say anything, all the other people who are in that assembly also did not say anything, because Chitraketu did not mean anything wrong. He did not do any offense. If what Chitraketu has done was really an offense to a Vaishnava, all these people who are attending that meeting, they should have blocked their ears and they should have walked out of that assembly. Just like when Shishupal was criticizing Krishna in the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthir Maharaj, many people just blocked their ears and they cursed Shishupal and they spoke against Shishupal, and some people left that assembly also. But nothing of that sort has happened in this assembly. Chitraketu Maharaj criticized Lord Shiva, but he has done with a proper intention. But still he was bold enough in saying that about Lord Shiva out of his slight tinge of pride. That's what is objectionable in his character at this point. So when Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva like this, Parvati got offended. Shiva did not say anything and all other people did not say anything, but Parvati got offended so much. Parvati said, "Is he the appointed chastiser and punisher to punish shameless people like us? Indra, this Brahma, Bhrugu, Narada, four Kumaras, Manu, Kapila, looks like all of them have forgotten their dharma. And this person only remembers dharma, it seems. He is coming to correct us. Is he considering us shameless? And is he considering himself so exalted? He has surpassed the demigods." When some senior people and many other exalted people were not presenting their opinions, how can a younger person present their opinion? Narada Muni was sitting there and so many other people were there. Like Brahma never spoke anything to Shiva, Bhrugu never spoke, Narada did not speak, four Kumaras did not speak, Manu did not speak. How can Chitraketu speak? Chitraketu is much younger compared to all these exalted personalities. And Mother Parvati told that this person does not deserve shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. He is so proud. He is thinking himself to be better controller of his senses than Lord Shiva also. "My dear son, become a demon," she said. So Parvati cursed Chitraketu to become a demon. But Prabhupada says that when a child does a mistake, mother punishes and chastises the child. Similarly, when Chitraketu did this mistake, mother Parvati cursed him. And of course, this curse of Parvati is inspired by the Supreme Lord. Actually, Lord Sankarsana who is the worshipable lord of Chitraketu, he was actually missing Chitraketu's association. He wanted Chitraketu to give up this life as the king of Vidyadhara and come back to the loving association and company of the Supreme Lord. So that's why he arranged this whole incident. So Chitraketu had a slight tinge of pride in him because he received the favor of Sankarsana. So Chitraketu was a devotee of Sankarsana. Lord Shiva was also a devotee of Sankarsana. So Chitraketu thought that we both are devotees of the same Lord, so I can speak something about Shiva. He thought like that. And although Shiva was more exalted than Chitraketu, Chitraketu gave that feedback because of that slight tinge of pride. And actually the Lord wanted to purify Chitraketu from that slight tinge of pride. That's why he arranged this whole cursing through Parvati. So Parvati cursed Chitraketu. Then Chitraketu got down from his airplane, came in front of Mother Parvati and offered obeisances to Parvati and said, "My dear mother, I didn't mean anything wrong. And I accept your curse gratefully. And actually, the demigods bestow happiness and distress on common people as a result of one's own past deeds. So whatever happiness or distress that we are experiencing is only a result of our own past deeds. And the suffering is also a process of purification. So in this samsara chakra, what is happiness and what is distress? Samsara chakra etasmin. Skahashapaha kon vanugraha. What is happiness? What is distress? What is curse? What is blessing? What is heaven? What is hell? So these temporary dualities do not have any permanent effect on all of us. So, and we should not hold anyone responsible for it. Naivatma na parashchapi kartasya sukhadukhayoho. We should not consider other people as cause of our happiness or distress. So we should just accept them the way they come in our lives. And he says, guna pravaha etasmin. So whatever is happening in this world, happiness or distress or whatever, it's only the pravaha of the modes. Pravaha means flow. The flow of the material modes is causing happiness and distress and various other dualities in this world. We should not be so affected by these temporary dualities. Material world is like a salt mine. In a salt mine, you will only see salt everywhere. There is no possibility of getting some sugar in some corner. Similarly, in the material world, we only see distress everywhere. There is no possibility of happiness. And even the so-called happiness that we get in this material world is ultimately distress, and it is also temporary. So one should not be unnecessarily feeling so bad or morose for experiencing difficulties in this world. The Lord is beyond all dualities. He is equal to all. Although He is neutral, He creates so many situations and dualities in this material world to continue this materialistic life. So He is neutral like a judge. He is neutral like the government. So like that, Chitraketu Maharaj gives so many examples also. And finally He tells Mother Parvati, "My dear mother, I did not mean anything wrong. But whatever you consider is wrong in my behavior, let that be wrong and may I be forgiven for it. Please, please forgive me for that." So basically, any chaste wife would feel offended and feel bad when her exalted husband is criticized by someone. So here Mother Parvati felt so bad that her husband is criticized. So Chitraketu clarified, saying that I did not have any disrespectful attitude towards your husband. I didn't mean anything wrong. But whatever I have done is caused some inconvenience and pain to your heart. So please forgive me for whatever I have done. I'm sorry. And I accept your curse and I'm leaving. So Chitraketu left. So then after that, Shiva started speaking to Mother Parvati. After Chitraketu left, Shiva spoke to Parvati. "My dear Parvati, you are so beautiful, but the beauty of Krishna's devotees is greater than your beauty. Have you not seen that Chitraketu was not at all upset or bewildered by the curse that you have given him? He called you mother. He said sorry to you. He begged forgiveness. And he offered you respect. So despite the fact that you have cursed him just now. So that is the exalted nature of great devotees. And if your curse has not caused him any problem or any anxiety or any difficulty, your curse is practically useless. He says that Narayana paraha sarve nakutaschana bibhyati svargapavarga narakeshu apituliyartha darshinaha. Narayana paraha sarve means devotees of Narayana are actually very glorious. Whether they go to hell or heaven or attain liberation, they are always focused on service to the Supreme Lord. Narayana paraha sarve, they are never afraid of going to hell also. Because wherever they are, they only serve Krishna. That's their main agenda. Then Shiva speaks so many other things and he glorifies the Supreme Lord. And he also glorifies the neutral nature and affectionate nature of the Supreme Lord. And he glorifies the Lord's devotees. And he says that, oh my dear Parvati, I am a devotee of Sankarsana and Chitraketu is also a devotee of Sankarsana. Just as Chitraketu is commenting on me that I am sitting so intimately with my wife, I might comment on him that he is traveling with Vidyadhara woman in an airplane and enjoying so nicely. Actually, Chitraketu was enjoying with the Vidyadhara woman by glorifying the Supreme Lord. That was his enjoyment with Vidyadhara woman in that airplane. So, this is the standard behavior of a Vaishnava. He has great tolerance. So then Mother Parvati, hearing the glories of the devotees from Shiva, she became little ashamed and she covered her face with her cloth out of shame. So in this way, Chitraketu Maharaj was cursed to become a demon by Mother Parvati. And in his next life, this Chitraketu Maharaj became Vritrasur. In the previous episode, we discussed about Vritrasur. So Vritrasur was Chitraketu. And Chitraketu became Vritrasur. And in just one lifetime, that's not a long lifetime also, he came out of the sacrificial fire, he went to the battlefield, fought with Indra, he was killed by Indra, and he went back to Godhead. Such a brief life. So, because of his slight tinge of pride, the Lord has arranged a curse in the life of Chitraketu through Mother Parvati, and he purified him of that slight tinge of pride also, and he went back to Godhead. The Supreme Lord took Chitraketu back to Godhead. So that completes the episode of Chitraketu. And this whole episode of Vritrasur, Chitraketu, Vishwarupa and everything came because we were discussing in the 6th chapter, we were discussing the lineage of the daughters of Daksha. So Daksha had 60 daughters and they married different personalities. One of the daughters, Aditi, got married to Kashyapa and her sons are the 12 Adityas. And one of the 12 Adityas, Tvashta, married Rachana, and Tvashta and Rachana gave birth to Vishwarupa. And that Vishwarupa was accepted as a guru by the demigods. So then, this we have discussed in the 6th chapter. And this whole section from 7th chapter till 17th chapter is in response to Parikshit's question about that Vishwarupa. Okay, Vishwarupa, then Vritrasur and Chitraketu, all these incidents came. So now we will go back to the lineage of the daughters of Daksha. So Sukadeva Goswami describes the lineages. Who are the other descendants of the daughters of Daksha? So Daksha had a daughter named Diti. And Diti gave birth to Maruts, 49 Maruts. So Diti's sons are Daityas, or the demons. So Diti's sons are Maruts, and Maruts were accepted as demigods by Indra. So that's what Sukadeva Goswami told. So while describing the lineage of Diti, Sukadeva Goswami said that Diti's sons, Maruts, were taken as demigods, were taken into the heavenly kingdom. And Parikshit Maharaj asked, how come Diti's sons are born with demoniac mentality generally? So how come they have accepted the position of demigods? Then our Sukadeva Goswami started narrating. Diti had two sons earlier through Kashyapa. They were Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Varahadev and Hiranyakashipu was killed by Narasimhadev. So Diti became very envious of Indra. Only for the sake of Indra, the Supreme Lord became Varaha and Narasimha and killed my sons. So Diti thought that her sons were killed because of Indra, and she became so envious of Indra and she started serving Kashyapa Muni with great love and affection. And Kashyapa Muni was so impressed with the service of Diti, and he told Diti, "Oh Diti, whatever you want, you can ask from me." Then Diti said, "My dear husband, I want a son who can kill Indra." Then Kashyapa Muni was so surprised. "Oh, you wanted a son who can kill Indra? That's a great sin." He was speaking inside. She has cheated me. She served me so nicely and affectionately, but with this malicious intent to kill Indra. Anyways, because she has tricked me to get this benediction, I will also trick her to make her perform bhakti. Then Kashyapa Muni said, "My dear Diti, you should worship the Supreme Lord, worship Lakshmi Narayana. You should perform a vrata called Pumsavana Vrata for 1 year. And if you practice this vrata so nicely and meticulously, you will get a son who can kill Indra. But otherwise, you will get son who will become friend of Indra." Then Diti said, no, I will practice the Pumsavana Vrata very meticulously. And then she started practicing. Then Indra came there claiming that, "My dear mother Diti, I will assist you in your vrata." Then Diti allowed, okay, fine, this boy came. And then she allowed Indra to assist. And Indra was constantly checking the activities of Diti so that he can find some discrepancy in her vrata and he can kill the embryo. So one day Diti deviated slightly from her vrata. So she was sleeping at a wrong place at a wrong time. And Indra entered the womb of Diti and he has cut the embryo into 7 pieces. And the 7 pieces of embryo became seven kids. Then Indra has again cut each of those 7 pieces into 7 further pieces. Total 49 pieces were there. And the 49 pieces became 49 children. They were the 49 Maruts. And meanwhile, Diti got up from her sleep and saw 49 children. And she asked Indra, "Indra, tell me the truth. How come there are 49 children here? What did you do?" Then Indra narrated the whole thing. And Indra said, "My dear mother, Diti, actually I came with an intent to find discrepancies and faults in your vrata and kill your embryo. But somehow you got 49 glorious children. I accept them as my younger brothers and I take them as demigods to the heavenly planets." And Diti happily agreed and she gave up all her envy towards Indra also. So Indra had a plan to harm Diti, but there was a transformation in Indra, and then there was also a transformation in Diti's character. So all this is because of the Pumsavana Vrata, which is basically a worship of Lakshmi Narayana. So in this way, the Lord protected his devotees and the whole process of devotional service transformed the mentality of Indra and Diti. So, and the details of Pumsavana Vrata are further described in the last chapter, 19th chapter. So, in this way, we completed the 6 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam in the Bhagavata Pravaha series. In 30 episodes, we have completed 6 cantos. And the 6th canto presents the prominent theme of Poshanam. Poshanam means protection offered by the Lord. So, although sometimes the devotees may do some mistakes or transgress certain codes of dharma, the Supreme Lord is so compassionate on his devotees and he gives blessings and protection to his devotees. We have seen the mistakes of so many people in this whole 6th canto. We saw the story of Ajamila, we saw the story of Indra, then Vritrasur, means Chitraketu, and Diti, and Indra again. So the Lord offers protection to his devotees and it's a very hope-giving canto how the Lord always protects his devotees. And we have completed 6 cantos. And thank you all very much for your wonderful participation. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.